But if they're the couple I'm thinking of, I don't think they'll be giving me a 5-star review. Obviously, he doesn't know. He's still speaking about them in the present tense. Really? Nick and I say in unison. I probably shouldn't say anything. It's okay. James confided that they were having some problems. Nick jumps in and twirls the lie without skipping a beat. Yeah, it sure seemed like that. I overheard them bickering before we even started the trail. He pauses as if he knows what we're wondering. I have no idea what about, but you know, that didn't seem that unusual to me. I've seen it all. Honeymooners duking it out, newly engaged folks like you two battling. Even in a place like this, it happens.
Nick and I nod. I'm not sure if Nick really knows what Jacob means, but I do.
Then once we started hiking, we weren't even to marker one. She sat down, said she was a bit dizzy, that she didn't eat breakfast, but she didn't want to stop. We both kept checking in, asking her if she was okay, and she said she was, but it was clear she was having a hard time. Finally, James told me they had to quit, that she wasn't up to it.
Nick bites his lower lip and balls his hands into fists at his sides.
Did they say what was wrong with her? Nah, just that she was tired. I offered to stop the tour and escort them back to the bottom of the trail, but James refused, arguing that they weren't that far up anyway. And Dylan agreed with him, so I let them go back on their own, just hoping the boss didn't find out, because it's really against policy. But I could tell James wasn't going to take no for an answer.
Jacob stops talking, and a palpable silence descends until he starts again.
So, was she okay? Was she just overheating, or maybe even a little out of shape? Because this hike isn't easy, especially on a hot day like this. Maybe she'd had too much champagne the night before. We see it all here.
He stops again and looks at Nick. Before Nick can respond, Jacob waves his hands.
Ah, I'm being rude. It's none of my business anyway. We'd better get on with this hike.
An hour and a half later, we reach the top. Jacob explains that we're at the Kilauea Ridge and tells us we're looking at the Kahala Wind Farm, and there are 35 wind turbines stretched out before us that are visible from all over Maui. I take a deep breath as Jacob rambles about the history of the wind farm and decide that this time I don't need Nick's guided meditation to help me through. If I learned anything yesterday, it's that I'm stronger than I've ever given myself credit for.
I made it up this ass-blasting, thigh-burning, steepy and rocky hike without a single anxiety attack. And I also accomplished it when she couldn't.
And I know how that sounds, that she got sick and I'm happy about it. And maybe that's true. But I can't help but feel competitive. She was sleeping with my husband, after all.
You did it.
Nick walks up behind me, placing his hand on mine. I did, I say as I look over the cliff's edge toward the ocean below, letting the wind slice through my hair. I'm shaking, and my heart feels like it might burst through my chest. But you know what? I feel alive.
Chapter 20. Jax. Before.
I sipped my piña colada, the cool mix of rum, pineapple, and coconut, tasting exactly like I imagined paradise would. My head still buzzed slightly from all the wedding festivities. I was no longer Jax Connor. Now I'd answer to Mrs. James Morales, and rather than merely drooling over pictures of the cabanas at the Four Seasons Hotel in Wailea, I was relaxing in one, the attentive pool boy popping by every few minutes to see if I needed a refill, a cool towel, or anything at all. I'd never had anyone wait on me, and it felt surreal to be lying under the giant white cabana, facing the pristine pool with the grand fountain in the middle, the deep cobalt ocean waters just in the distance. I hadn't planned to be here. James and I were supposed to be in a Victorian room at a quaint B&B in Santa Barbara. The limited savings we had between us would have barely covered airfare anywhere, so we decided to go somewhere local and take a honeymoon later, when we could afford it. But James's mom had surprised us with this trip during her toast at the wedding reception, Riley joking that there was no way her son and his new wife were missing out on a proper honeymoon. The bed and breakfast we'd booked in Santa Barbara just wouldn't do. The crowd had tittered and laughed, and I'd noticed James tense at the slight dig his mother had made. But it hadn't bothered me. I agreed that we deserved a real vacation and would have charged it on a credit card if James had let me. We needed to bond as husband and wife, and if we didn't go away now, I suspected we'd be one of those couples who never did. At the reception, I'd been giddy and flushed from the champagne I'd been drinking, and I'd run over and hugged Isabella tightly, feeling thankful I'd inherited such a generous mother-in-law. Isabel flinched slightly when I squeezed her. But I wasn't surprised. I'd quickly noticed that giving material gifts came easy for my mother-in-law. It was offering the emotional one she seemed to struggle with. Hopefully in time that would change. I was used to an affectionate family. You could never enter my parents' house without giving them each a tight hug. Once my mom embraced Isabella so tightly at Thanksgiving that I thought she might break her. The pinched look on my mother-in-law's face, something Beth and I had laughed about later. I had started to pull away from Isabella when she held on to my shoulders, then leaned in closer. And I'd involuntarily inhaled a strong whiff of her Chanel No. 5 perfume as she whispered, "You can use this romantic getaway to start trying. James told me he's ready." I'd stepped back so I could see her face. I studied Isabella's hazel eyes. She was serious. James had talked to her about this? I shook off the uneasy feeling that washed over me. I thought about the check that Isabella had given us last month. The money she'd insisted was a gift for the nice, big house she wanted us to buy, which I now clearly understood was payment for the pack of grandkids I was to provide for her. I stood in the center of the ballroom at the Pelican Hill Golf Club and wondered, would Isabella's generosity always come with strings? Now at the hotel, I adjusted my white straw hat to shield my face from the hot sun that was beginning to peer into the cabana. I knew we couldn't wait long. James and I had talked about kids. I knew he wanted them. My stomach tightened as I thought of my last gynecologist appointment, when I'd gone in for my annual exam. I swished the memory away. We were still so young, just 25 and 27 respectively. I still had plenty of time to figure things out.
"What have you been thinking about? You've been staring off into space for 10 minutes.
James stood over me, his olive skin already a deep brown from the sun, drops of water falling from his red swim trunks to the concrete, creating a speckled pattern by his feet. I swatted him playfully with my magazine.
"Were you stalking me?"
"What if I was?"
"Then I'd say that's pretty damn creepy."
I laughed.
"If you want to call me names, then fine. I'll take it. But I blame you."
He pointed at me.
"Me?"
"Yeah.
You.
It's not my fault I couldn't keep my eyes off of you. You're the most beautiful woman here."
I smiled. "You said that to me the first time we met."
"I did?"
James sat on the edge of my chair and put his hand on my ankle, sending an electric current up my leg. I cocked my head.
"Yes, how can you not remember that? Or were there so many pretty girls at the store that day that you went from aisle to aisle until one of us took the bait?"
I had been chewing on my thumbnail, debating between a Cabernet and a Pinot, when I saw an arm reach past me and grab a bottle.
"This one," he'd said as he set the Wild Horse Pinot Noir in my cart.
I had whipped around, ready to be annoyed, because really, who did that? Until I saw his face, the way his eyes sparkled, the slight 5 o'clock shadow, and his smile. It shone like a beacon.
"Why should I listen to you?" I teased and pointed at the 6-pack of Corona Light in his hand.
"You look like a beer drinker to me, and also a fan of kids' cereal, it seems." I nodded at the Lucky Charms under his other arm.
I'm multidimensional. When I'm with the guys, I drink this, he said, and held up the Corona. When I'm with the most beautiful woman in the room, I drink this, he said, grabbing the Pinot out of my cart. And when I'm alone, I eat this. He held up the red box with the rainbow and leprechaun on the front.
So what will you be doing tonight? I blurted before I could stop myself.
He was cheesy and had obviously done this before. His charm was effortless, like a skill he'd been honing for years. Yet, there was something about him. In just 1 minute, he'd made me feel more special than my last boyfriend had the entire 3 months we'd been together. He'd always made me work so damn hard for it. But this guy, he was making it so easy. I was ready for easy.
James had smiled and tucked the bottle under his arm.
Drinking the wine with you, of course. I knew Beth would roll her eyes so hard later when I told her the story, but I hadn't cared. Tell me when and where. That was the beginning of it all. We were married 9 months later, and now we were in Maui.
James laughed and stroked my leg.
I may not remember what I said to you at the store that day, but I do know what I thought.
Let me guess. You were thinking, she'd better have good taste in wine or this is never going to go anywhere.
No way. I was hoping you'd have some milk for me, Lucky Charms, he said with a poor attempt at an Irish accent.
I pushed him in his tight abs. You know, surprisingly, your cheesiness was one of the things I loved from the moment I met you. I ran my fingers through his thick, wet hair.
You wear cheesy well. James smiled. Thanks, I think.
You should have seen the look on your face when I grabbed that wine bottle off the shelf. I was about to reach for my mace until I saw how cute you were.
Hey, cute guys can be psychopaths too.
I kissed him deeply. I decided I'd take my chances.
Good thing.
He reached up and caressed my breast over my triangle top, and my body caved into his.
Maybe we should go up to the room, James said. That cabana boy is going to be here any second, and if I didn't know better, I'd think he was coming up with excuses to check on you. He's been over here every 5 minutes.
Whatever, I breathed, running my finger inside the waistband of his swim trunks.
I'm not going to be able to stand up for a couple minutes.
He nodded toward his erection, and we laughed. I hoped our sex life would never change, that a simple touch could always send sparks flying, that we'd never stop wanting each other with such hot passion. But if I listened to Beth, apparently the odds were stacked against us. My sister had gotten married only 4 years before and recently confided that their sex life had become routine, and she'd found herself fantasizing about George Clooney. I'd been incredulous. Beth was only a few years in, practically a newlywed.
That's the pregnancy hormones talking. Look at you. You're about to burst almost 8 months along.
I'd leaned over and rubbed Beth's swollen belly and said a silent prayer I'd also have one someday.
And after you have the baby, you'll get the passion back.
Beth had only rolled her eyes at me as she waddled into the laundry room to wash some baby clothes she'd just purchased. I traced James's chest with my finger.
Can I ask you something? If I can get up yet? Nope. I keep looking at your boobs in that bathing suit, and well, unless I want to scare some children, we should probably wait.
He pulled my hands away.
And you should probably stop doing that, or we're never going to get out of here.
I flung a towel at him.
Gross! Seriously, I want to ask you something. You have my undivided attention.
James smirked. Do you believe in monogamy? Like, long-term, forever, never seeing another vagina monogamy?
Isn't it a little late to be bringing this up?
James laughed and pointed to my ring. I noticed his bare finger, remembering his declaration that he didn't see himself wearing a wedding band. He'd said he'd just lose it, claiming his mom had once bought him an expensive watch and he'd misplaced it the next day. At first I'd been upset, arguing that it would look like he didn't want to appear married. But he swore that wasn't it at all. That he loved me, and why did it matter if other people thought he was someone's husband? All that mattered was that we knew it. I hadn't been able to argue with that. I'm being serious. Do you really think it's possible to keep the spark alive with the same person you've been having sex with for 50 years? Beth is already preparing to fantasize about whatever hot actor People chooses as the sexiest man alive. And she and Mark have only been married 4 years. Do people even have sex when they're 70? That's how old my grandmother is. Will you stop? I'm trying to talk to you here. Forget 50 years. What about 5?
5? God, I hope we're still into each other like this when we're only 5 years in. But, Jax, marriage is about a lot more than sex.
James said the last part with an air of authority that slightly bothered me, like he was an expert on the subject. I know that. I sat up and crossed my legs. I'm not just talking about the physical part. I mean all of it. The same person, day in and day out. You don't think that's going to be hard?
Of course it will. We're both going to find ourselves attracted to other people along the way. That's normal. What's not normal is acting on it.
True, I said, and thought about the story Beth had told me last week about her neighbors. The wife had just found out her husband had been cheating on her for 1.5 years. She'd sobbed to Beth that she'd had no clue. I had shaken my head, not understanding how betrayal could be undetected in a marriage for so long. Have you ever cheated on anyone? The question flew out of my mouth. I'd never asked him before. But that story about Beth's neighbors had gotten under my skin. Made me think that maybe I should have.
No. But is this some secret plan to make my erection go away?
He looked down.
Because it worked.
I laughed. No. I heard this horrible story about Beth's neighbor the other day, and it made me think, I said, and gave James the details. That a text had come in on her husband's phone, and she'd grabbed it thinking it was their son in college who always checked in on Sunday mornings. But it wasn't him. It was a picture of a naked woman lying in bed. And when she asked her husband who it was, he told her everything. And the hardest part, she told Beth, was how relieved he seemed that she finally knew the truth, that he didn't have to hide any longer. James kissed me lightly when I finished.
That won't be you and me. I promise. We just need to make sure to be completely open with each other. And we need to be the kind of people who don't look at each other's phones.
What's that supposed to mean? I balked.
I'm kidding, Jax.
He reached over and handed his phone to me.
Here you go. I've got nothing to hide.
Aren't you going to ask me if I've ever cheated? James stroked my hair.
I don't have to. You're the most honest and loyal person I've ever met.
It's one of the many reasons I fell in love with you, he whispered. Now was the time to tell him, especially after what Isabella had implied at the reception, the house, the honeymoon. It was only a matter of time before she'd start putting more pressure on him. That she'd want to be paid back in the form of a grandchild. But I couldn't find the words. I wanted to savor every minute of our honeymoon, not tainted with bad news. That could wait until we got back. You're right, I whispered as I stood up and guided him away from the cabana and toward the hotel room. Chapter 21. Jax. After. My mom likes to check boxes. Dry cleaning? Check. Pick up prescriptions? Check. Jax is okay. Check. She's called me twice today, trying her best to tick that box next to my name. I'm not sure if it's because Beth told her where I am, even though I asked her not to, or if her mother's intuition is kicking in and she knows I'm somewhere she wouldn't approve of. Doing something she might classify as crazy. But either way, it's just another thing I'm going to have to deal with if I answer her call. Manage her needs. She needs me to tell her I'm fine, that I'm getting through it. She wants me to say something I may never say again, that I'm back to normal. Because the thing is, my mom doesn't do well when things don't go as expected. She always needed Beth and me to dot our I's and cross our T's, to pay our bills, to be good daughters and wives. If she knew I have a therapist, she'd flip her lid. Why on God's green earth would you do that? Just like how she reacted when I told her I was engaged to James after just 3 months. My mom pinched the fabric of her canary yellow cardigan sweater just below her neck. Someone looking on would think she had a chill, but I knew better. She was pissed. Not exactly the reaction I was hoping for. I poured a glass of iced tea and sat on one of the bar stools by the kitchen counter, waiting. What did you think I was going to say? Her voice was light, but her eyes told the real story. I'd rocked the boat, and that she didn't like. I've never even met this man. She started to pace the room. I know, and you will, tonight. My voice came out sounding needy, desperate. James and I had planned for him to come over, to bring her roses and my dad a bottle of his favorite whiskey. I knew once they met him, he'd charm the shit out of them, because that's what he did. My mom started to lap the kitchen island. I knew what she was thinking. How could I go off script? This wasn't how we did things in the Connor family. I need to process this. She stopped and pressed her palms into the counter. I know it's fast. We've only been dating a few months, but he's... I had planned to list my favorite things about him. He was smart. He was a gentleman. He was close with his own mom. But she cut me off. Are you pregnant? What? No. Our eyes locked. Don't you think I would have led with that? I finally said, then started to pick a hangnail on my thumb. My mom began walking again. I could be 5, 15, or my current age, 25. It didn't matter. This was how conflict between us looked. I presented my case weakly. My mom wouldn't listen, her disappointment dripping from her, so palpable I could almost reach out and touch it. I'd usually start to backpedal. My mom's approval suddenly meaning more to me than what I'd wanted her to approve of. But something had shifted in me this time. I wanted James more than my mom's blessing. How can you know someone well enough to agree to marry them after just 3 months? She was right, of course. It was probably intellectually impossible to know someone that well in 90 days. But I didn't care. Because I knew how James made me feel. Like the most beautiful woman in the room. Like he loved me more than anything. He made me feel desired. I recounted to my mother the story of how I met James in the wine aisle at the supermarket, and she wasn't nearly as charmed by it. What I didn't tell her was what had happened next. He'd taken me out for sushi at a little hole in the wall that didn't even have a menu. The chef just whipped up whatever was fresh. The salmon sashimi had melted in my mouth, and the wine had slid smoothly down my throat. James had this way of putting me at ease. Unlike on other first dates, I didn't feel awkward or grapple with words. That's probably why I'd let him take me back to his apartment and fuck me in a very ungentlemanlike way on the floor as soon as his front door closed. I'd woken the next morning as the sun streamed in through the brown and orange plaid sheets he was using as curtains in his bedroom. I'd propped myself up on one elbow on his futon. Yes, futon. What is that thing men say to each other? I'd laughed as I pulled the blanket over my chest for warmth, not discretion. James had allowed me an instant comfort about my body I'd never felt before. Not with words, but with his eyes. The way they drank me in. Suddenly, the smallish breasts I'd always despised were perfect. The ass I constantly tried to cover up was juicy. And my face, the same one I dissected from every angle, was beautiful. That was James's superpower. He can make you addicted to the way he saw you. Probably because it was so much more flattering than how you viewed yourself. Don't they say that there are the girls you fuck on the first night and the girls you marry? I hadn't waited for him to answer. I guess I'm in the former category, so the pressure's off. Despite the fact I'd given myself to him so easily that first night, we'd fallen fast and hard for each other. I'd finish up in my classroom, then count the hours until he was off work. I blew off my other friends. I forgot to call my mom back. Every breath began and ended with him. Every thought was laced with his scent. The real world became distant. The only thing that mattered was the time I spent with James. Beth thought I was obsessed. I was scared she might be right. I hadn't planned on hoarding our relationship forever, but before I could introduce him to my family, he'd proposed. He'd taken me back to that sushi place and knelt down on the dusty floor and asked if I'd take a leap of faith with him. Would I be his wife? There was no question in my mind. There was no way I could ever be without him. I said yes. I realized this may have not been the best decision. Marrying someone whose middle name I'd learned the day before he proposed. It's Julian. That it may have led me here, chasing his cheating ghost along the Maui coast. But if he'd asked me a million more times, the answer would always have been yes for me. A picture of my mom holding her 14-year-old Cocker Spaniel pops up on my phone. Her third call. But I don't answer. Because I'm nowhere near normal. She'll hear it in my voice. She'll question me. And the thing is, I'm so tired of lies. But the truth is just too much work. I send her to voicemail, kick off my sandals, and dip my toes into the sand. It's soft and warm, and I let it soothe me. Nick shoots me a questioning look. I'm not ready to talk to her yet, I say, and look around for our server. Want to start with the coconut calamari and the crab and macadamia nut wontons? Nick asks, looking up from the hula grill menu. Yes, and can we get some fries, too? Anything else, hungry girl? Nick laughs. What can I say? I'm eating my feelings. I smile. I watch the band getting ready to perform on a small stage. Our table is literally sitting on a floor of sand, and in front of us is an amazing view of the beach that's so picturesque, it makes you say touristy things you never thought you'd say, like, we're in paradise, or this looks like a movie set. I'll admit, I said that one to Nick a few minutes ago. I'm so happy we didn't have to go on another tour today. I roll my eyes at Nick, but I don't say the next part. That it was nice to hang out with him and not think about them, to not have them infiltrate every thought.
Oh, please. You know you were bummed we didn't go rock climbing or skydiving.
Actually, I was hoping for some deep-sea fishing. I laugh and snort, covering my nose with my hand. Whoops.
A snort, huh,
Nick says and leans back.
I guess you're finally getting comfortable with me.
I feel my cheeks heat up. I hate when I do that. It's so embarrassing.
I think it's cute.
Really?
Sure. I've always thought it's the quirks that make a person interesting.
I take a drink of my water, thinking of how my snort bugged James. Not at first. When we'd met, he thought it was cute, too. Even used to playfully mimic me when he heard it. But later, when things changed, it began to irritate him. I remember being at a party once, and he glanced my way when he heard it. He knew how to work a room and expected me to do the same. Snorting was not an option. You know, it's not something I can control, I said on the way home that night, trying to hide how stupid I felt. How sad I was that we'd ended up here. in a place that made it okay for my husband to chastise me for simply being myself.
Oh, come on, Jax.
He kept his eyes on the road as he spoke, and I was thankful because he couldn't see how much his criticism hurt. Then he delivered the blow.
Sure you can.
And after that, I did learn to control it. Except for when I drink. When I drink, I forget. My smooth edges become rough again. I look up from my thoughts and notice Nick watching me.
What were you just thinking about?
He says.
Your face got all dark.
Nothing, I say. It doesn't matter anymore. I shake off the memory of James and force a smile. What about you? What are the quirks that make you interesting?
Oh, I'm wildly boring. Supremely uninteresting.
Nick laughs. Is that your way of saying you don't have any idiosyncrasies?
Saved by the bell.
Nick points to my phone, which is ringing again.
Is that your mom again?
And Poochie Poo. Nick presses his lips together to stifle a laugh.
Poochie Poo?
Yep.
She keeps calling. Aren't you concerned something might be wrong?
No, she's just worried about me.
So then why not answer?
Unworry her. I give him a look.
She doesn't know you're here, does she?
Nope.
At least I don't think so. Does she know about James and Dylan?
I shake my head and chew the inside of my lower lip. She eventually got over the shock of my whirlwind romance, and as predicted, James eventually charmed her and grudgingly earned her acceptance. But she never let me forget that I hadn't properly vetted him. She actually used that term, like he was running for Congress, not becoming a member of her family.
Are you serious, Mom?
I was holding a card he'd given me for our one-year wedding anniversary, a ridiculously sappy one that he'd bought me as a joke. The idea that someone else had to explain your deep romantic emotions had made us laugh.
You're really going to use that word? Your father could have run a background check.
Mom, he doesn't have a criminal record, okay? And I've known him for 2 years. Don't you think he would have murdered me by now if that were his goal? My mom took a deep breath.
People don't always do things by the book, Mom. You need to get over your obsession with coloring inside the lines.
What's that supposed to mean?
That you always need everything and everyone so orderly.
Sometimes life is unpredictable, messy even. Sometimes you just have to trust your gut. If you spend your whole life scared to make the wrong choice, how is that really living?
You can be so naive, Jax, my mom said, like she felt sorry for me.
Back then, her skepticism made me angry. It even drove an invisible wedge between us that we never acknowledged. But when the police told me James had been in Maui, the first person I thought of was my mom. And how she was right. I had been naive. But not anymore. Now I finally know the man I married. Or I'm getting to know him anyway.
It's complicated why I don't want to talk to my mom, I finally say to Nick. Have you ever had a blue Hawaiian drink? I ask, and point to one on the table next to us, trying to change the subject.
Why don't you tell me about it?
He says.
The blue Hawaiian? I ask and smile.
Then I snort. Again. The floodgates have been opened.
No, silly.
He laughs and his eyes soften.
Tell me about your mom.
I start to explain that I'd rather not, but there's something about how he's looking at me. Those eyes again. He wants to know, not just to pass time. He wants to understand more about me, about what makes me tick. And he doesn't mind if I snort while telling him. I blurt out everything. Our quick engagement, my mom's obsession with normalcy, my fear that she was right. That I'm not sure I can ever trust my gut again. How much that scares me.
I can't believe I just told you all that, I say when I finish.
I'm glad you did.
Me too. I feel better. I think about how easy it is to talk to Nick, how I never feel judged by him. James had an arrogance about him. It was subtle. But I picked up on it a lot. Like how he sounded so condescending when he'd say something like, "Oh, is that what you decided to do?" Like he was thinking he would have made a better choice. The right choice. During one of our particularly bad fights, I told him he had a superiority complex. He laughed and told me I was delusional. Nick and I listened to the band, eat our food and sip our cocktails. A comfortable silence between us. "Let's get a drink at the bar," Nick suggests when we finished our dinner. "I'm going to buy their CD first." I start for the stage. "That's those Blue Hawaiians talking," he calls after me. "You'll never listen to it." "Maybe not." I think of the CD James and Dylan purchased for their Road to Hana drive as I hand the singer a $10 bill. Then again, maybe I will listen to it. Nick orders two POGs, this time with vodka, and I think about our day. We drove to Lahaina and had giant cinnamon rolls at Longy's. We shopped for silly souvenirs and we got ice cream cones while walking around Whaler's Village. We mused at the number of payphones we'd spotted around the island. We even took a selfie with one, laughing about how we were old enough to remember them. For several hours, I pretended to be a real tourist on vacation, forcing any thoughts of why I was actually here from my mind.
"Hello. You're awfully quiet over there."
"I think I'm drunk."
"That means we're doing our job right,"
the bartender says as he sets our drinks down, the skin around his green eyes crinkling, his stubble-covered chin reminding me of James's. I look away, and Nick clinks his glass against mine.
"To finding out more about Dylan and James."
"Did you just say Dylan and James?"
"Yes," we say in unison.
"That's weird, because I met at Dylan and James a couple months ago. I'm sure they aren't the same people, but Dylan is just one of those names that stands out to me because I'm a huge Bob Dylan fan."
"Was she in her 20s? Blonde. Big blue eyes."
The bartender nods.
"And he was a good-looking guy. Dark hair. In sales?"
We nod.
"How is she?"
the bartender asks, with what seems to be a genuine concern. I keep quiet because obviously I can't say dead, and I realize the news of their accident must not have caught the attention of many people. That saddens me for a moment. I wonder what the first bartender we talked to saw in the paper. A paragraph? A couple of sentences, a few words. Was that all they got? All they deserved?
"Why do you ask?" Nick says.
Nick told me that we should always deflect when asked a question we can't answer, but I'm not quick enough on my feet to do that.
"She was feeling pretty sick when she was here. Did she find out yet?"
Our matching blank stares must trigger something with the bartender.
"Oh, shit! You didn't know?"
My head gets heavy, and I instinctively grip the edge of my stool for support, hoping that I've misunderstood him. I watch a waitress deliver a hamburger with bright orange melted cheese slipping out of the bun to a man sitting across the bar. I feel the vibration of a buzzer, then see its light shining bright red as a young couple giddily jumps up to claim their table. Then two women laugh and proclaim their luck as they slide into the stools that were just abandoned.
"What are you saying? Did she tell you she was?"
Nick stops, and out of the corner of my eye I see his shoulders slump. Please, God, don't let the bartender say the word. I can't look at Nick. I'm afraid he'll confirm my fears. The bartender leans in, oblivious.
"Pregnant,"
he says easily, oblivious to the impact of his words. Nick's head moves slowly up and down, and my insides are twisting so tight I can barely breathe.
"You didn't hear this from me, okay? But when her husband got up to use the bathroom,
She told me the smell of the shrimp he ordered was making her sick. So, of course, I asked, what was up with that? Like, were they bad? Because we make an amazing shrimp cocktail here.
He waves his arm covered in hemp bracelets behind him, where the kitchen presumably is. I nod to encourage him to keep going, because I have to hear every word of what he has to say. If I don't, I know I'll talk myself out of believing it. And as much as it hurts, as in feels like someone is punching me in the stomach over and over again, these are things I need to hear. I came here for the truth, no matter how much it might tear me apart.
She tells me she'd been feeling sick to her stomach and had already made up enough excuses for why she'd been so nauseated. I remember thinking, that was weird, that she couldn't tell her husband what was up, but I didn't say that. You know, a bartender's job is to listen. So I quickly pulled the shrimp cocktail away, offering to replace it with something else. Her big eyes filled with tears when I did that, which totally tripped me out. I was like, what is going on with this chick? Then she asked me where the nearest drugstore was, and I was like, whoa, now I know.
You think she wanted to get some Tums? I ask, although I'm quite sure that's not what Dylan wanted.
Nah, dude, you can buy those next door at the gift shop, which is what I told her. That's when she told me she was worried she might be pregnant. But then her dude came back and she acted like nothing had happened. It was a trip.
My God, Nick says. I watch the man across the bar eat a bite of his cheeseburger, lick his fingertips, and take a long drink of his beer. I hear the bleached blonde woman with the worn face snarkily remark from the stool beside me that there are cuter men at Duke's. I look up, and our bartender has moved on to take someone's order, as if he hasn't just wrecked me. But really, how could he know that I couldn't give my husband a child? So he found someone who could. That the wound inside of me has never had a chance to heal because it has been ripped open again and again with each negative pregnancy test, with every fight between James and me. And now with the words, she might be pregnant? On the outside, I give nothing away. But inside, I scream and I cry and I pound my fists, like the baby I could never give him. The bartender walks back over to us and picks up right where he left off.
So crazy, right? But we hear it all, man, he says, then turns to make a drink,
still having no idea of the bomb he's just dropped on us. Chapter 22. Jax. After.
Jax, wait!
I sprint away from the sound of Nick's voice. My feet cutting through the sand, my sandals dangling precariously from my hand. The thing is, I can't wait. I need to get as far away as possible from the news I've just heard. Maybe if I keep moving, I can outrun the truth. Dylan had been pregnant. I can't deny the possibility that James might have been the father. And my biggest fear has been confirmed. My own omission may have been the glue that bound their relationship. I trip over a pile of flip-flops that lie in the sand awaiting their owners. The Sunset Booze Cruises just docked on shore. My right knee slides into the sand, and I quickly manage to heave myself back up. It's amazing how agile desperation can make you. I glance back to see Nick jogging behind me. There's no doubt his pace is deliberately slow, that his strong legs barely feel the burn that mine already do. But wisely, he keeps his distance as I barrel toward the black rocks on the north end of Ka'anapali Beach. We both know I'm running myself into a corner, that he will catch up to me. It's hard to let go of who you thought you were. Take me, for instance. I've always considered myself a decent person. I teach the youth of America. I like animals and babies. I cheered when the Supreme Court legalized gay marriage. But now I realize that those were the easy choices. That just because you aren't a complete asshole that hates kids and kittens, it doesn't mean that you're good. It simply means that you aren't bad. And it's that in-between area that gets tricky. I'd never thought James and I had a bad marriage. He didn't verbally abuse me. I didn't nag him. He'd only gotten physical once. But had it been good? Not really. We existed somewhere in between, in the middle of the screaming and the love. I begin to slow down as I approach the black rocky peninsula that marks my dead end, unless I want to attempt to scale the wet, slippery, sharp rocks, which will definitely not end well. The sun has just set. The darkness begins to sweep the ocean. I take a left turn and walk into it, the waves lapping my calves. A few steps farther, and the water teases the hem of my yellow sundress, the one that James told me made my skin sparkle. But if you really think about it, his compliment didn't make sense. Eyes could sparkle, but skin. But James had a way of romancing his words, of making the false seem true. I feel Nick's hand grab mine when the water reaches my torso. Jax. He tugs me gently. I'm taking a post-sunset swim in my perky dress after I discover my husband got his mistress pregnant, and Nick doesn't know what to do. I don't blame him. I don't know what to do either. Do I keep moving into the deeper water, hoping the searing pain I'm feeling dissipates as my head goes under? That the silence under the sea will quiet my demons? Jax, come on. I shake my head as the first tears hit my chin. I'm not ready. And it's true, I'm not. In my mind, the shore is where reality lives. Here, in the sea, I still have the choice to float away, to leave all this bullshit behind. I shake my hand free from his and take two steps toward the skyline. The lingering orange and red hues from the sunset muted. The sky will be completely black soon. I'm ready for the darkness to consume me. Nick curls his arms tightly under my legs and pushes forcefully through the water toward the beach. I struggle, but I have no chance of breaking free. I'm no match for his strong grip. Nick puts his mouth to my ear as he carries me. Shh, he whispers over and over, the same chant I used to calm my nephew when he was an infant. I'd pace the living room as my sister slept, her exhaustion finally forcing her to call and ask for my help. I'd rocked him back and forth until he calmed. In Nick's hold, I'm much like my nephew, succumbing to the calming sounds, losing my will to struggle and becoming limp as he sets me gently on the sand. I wrap my hands around my knees, licking my salty tears. And Nick and I sit side by side on the sand for quite a while, listening to the soft waves lapping onto the shore. Finally, I work up the courage to ask Nick the one question I need an answer to. How can you be so sure the baby wasn't yours? After the bartender told us Dylan had been pregnant, Nick assured me he wasn't the father. Nick takes a long pause, running his wet hand through his hair, leaving a trail of sand on his hairline. We hadn't had sex in at least 2 months. Oh, I say, thinking about my sex life with James. We used to have sex every few days, but it had slowed in the past 2 years. Still, we never went more than a few weeks, no matter how bad things were. It was that addiction we had to each other, that need to be physically intertwined even when we were emotionally fragmented. I had no idea. It's not something you brag about. Nick looked away. Doesn't it make it any easier? I asked gently, feeling terrible that I wish it had been his and not James's, because it would make things better for me. Because the baby wasn't mine? I nod. I don't know. I think I'm just numb at this point. And I've got to keep my shit together right now, especially when you're out there pulling a Virginia Woolf. I laugh softly. Don't take this the wrong way, but I didn't think you were a literary type. There's a lot you don't know about me yet. He offers me a sad smile, and I reach over and grab his hand, sand rubbing between our palms. So, tell me then. He thinks for a minute. I make a mean Italian wedding soup. I broke my leg skiing when I was 19. And I do love to read. Everything from Stephen King to Hemingway. Well, for the record, I wasn't trying to drown myself out there. I stare out at the dark water. I didn't have a plan. I just wanted to get away from this. I wave my hand in the air, not sure what I'm pointing at. Him, the hotel, Maui, all of it. I know, Nick says, somehow understanding what I mean, even when I'm not sure I do. And I'm sorry. For what? I convinced you to come. If you hadn't, you wouldn't know these things. You wouldn't have to go through this. It's not your fault. Maybe this is how it had to be. Maybe we needed to know. I let go of his hand and lie back on the sand, letting the cool granules overtake my wet skin. The stars are beginning to emerge, and I trace my finger around the Big Dipper, remembering when James and I lay on this beach on our honeymoon and did the same thing. It's right there, he said, grabbing my hand and guiding it. How can you not see it? I do. I laughed and pointed up. But I hadn't seen the stars connect the same way he had. I just didn't want to disappoint him. I hated to do that. Disappoint people. I close my eyes to turn the stars off. They know too much. Hey, I hear Nick say. I open my eyes and stare up at him. You look cold. Your arms are covered in goosebumps. Suddenly I realize how cold I am. I sit up and wrap my arms around my knees. I feel Nick's arm around my shoulder.
This okay? Or does it feel like that terrible hug?
He asks, and I want to laugh. To go back in time to when we were sitting on the deck of my hotel room with no clue about Dylan's baby. But my sobs, they're sitting so high up in my throat that it burns to push them down. So instead, we sit in silence.
It's not our fault, you know, he finally says. This, them, the pregnancy. These were choices they made, for whatever reason. This isn't about you or me.
I could nod and pretend I agree. I could let Nick believe his own words. But I can't. I have to tell someone. You're right. It isn't about you. But it is about me, I say. Nick shakes his head vehemently.
You can't blame yourself.
Actually, I can, I say, and begin to tell him why. I'd kept a critical piece of information from James while we were dating, something he had a right to know, but that I didn't tell him because he might not have married me if I had. When I was 21, I was diagnosed with severe endometriosis. I'd been bleeding abnormally and finally went to see my OBGYN, who, after an ultrasound, grimly delivered the news. Scar tissue had developed around my ovaries and could keep eggs from being released. Pregnancy would be difficult. Unlikely. How unlikely? I'd asked. I was so young. At an age when not getting pregnant was the priority, I wasn't that concerned. My only experience with babies had been when I'd babysat, and all I remembered was drool, poop, and crying. Dr. Reynolds narrowed her green eyes. I'll never forget their color, like moss on the back of a wet rock. You might have a 20% chance of conceiving.
So I have a 20% chance.
I was naive. 20% seemed doable. Plus, my reproductive prospects at that time were limited to a guy I'd met at a dive bar in Redondo Beach who used the word legit to answer almost any question. Back then, a family seemed so far away, so surreal. James brought up having kids on our first date. I'd smiled and thought how different he was from the other men I'd dated recently, where noses scrunched up if the word baby was mentioned, even in passing. He brought it up more seriously the night after he proposed. We were lying in bed, me wrapped around him. At that time, I was like a sponge, desperate to soak up every drop he gave me. I'd sleep with my body pressed up against his each night, our legs twisted like a pretzel.
So, when do you think we should start?
Start what? I asked. Things I thought he'd respond with. Training for the 5K he'd mentioned, getting our real estate licenses to flip houses, because that was all the rage back then, and saving for a trip to Italy we'd talked about. What he actually responded with, a baby. Then before I could respond, he continued on, how many kids do you want? I'd like 3, maybe 4. The conversation with my doctor came rushing back. The way she'd looked at me like I didn't understand the seriousness of what she was saying. That there was an 80% chance I couldn't have a baby. The way I'd looked at her like she didn't understand how young I was, how that wasn't something I was even thinking about. I was so devastatingly ignorant. But now my future husband wanted to know when I could make him a father, not if. He kept going, telling me how he wanted to give his mom a bunch of grandkids. And I wanted nothing more than to do just that. I was dying to see if our brood would inherit his brilliant green eyes, the deep dimple on his right cheek, the shallow one on his left. Or would they possess my dark hair and quiet intensity? I felt desperate to know. Oh, I responded in surprise. James's eyes narrowed.
I know that's a lot of kids, but you'd be a great mom, and I'm going to be a dad who's totally invested. I want to coach their sports, teach them to swim, everything.
My silence must have concerned him, because he grabbed my hands and gave me the most serious look I'd seen from him at that point.
I should have told you something sooner. I had a younger brother who died when he was 5. He had leukemia. My mom was going to have more children, but after he passed away, she just couldn't do it. She was so afraid of losing another child. And my dad, he was so upset. We're Costa Rican. We have big families. My dad has 5 brothers. I have so many cousins I forget their names.
He laughed gently. I just feel compelled to continue our bloodline for him. I was beginning to see the downside of a whirlwind romance. In the few months we'd been together, we'd been busy falling in love and having fun, not discussing important details like this. And now, after he told me his heart-wrenching story, how could I share mine? Because that would have been the time to do it. If I'd been honest, if I'd just repeated the 3 words my doctor had said to me, 20% chance. Would he have scooped me up in his arms and told me those odds were good enough for him? I'll never know. I guess I was afraid he wouldn't say that. That he'd leave me. And I loved him. God, how I loved him. And I wanted to be his wife. And I wanted to be a mom. And there was a chance. Maybe not for multiple kids, but at least for one. Because I could be that 1 in 5. And if I wasn't, I thought the longer we were together, the more it upped my chances. Not necessarily of having a baby, but of keeping him. Because I loved him in a way I'd never loved anyone. He got under my skin in the best and worst ways. So instead of telling him what I'd heard as I sat at my OBGYN's table in my paper robe, I said, 4 kids sounds wonderful. Because it was true. It would be. But we didn't have 4 kids. The only 4 we experienced was the number of years that went by without children. It was New Year's Eve when I finally told him. We'd been married for a little over 3 years at that point. Lots of unprotected sex had been had. There was no baby. James wanted answers. And for some reason, at 11:58 p.m., as 1 year was about to turn into the next, I decided to give them to him. I couldn't start off another year with lies. Let's just say we didn't kiss at midnight. Or for a while after that.
James was so angry. I'd never seen him that mad before. He called me a liar. He said I'd trapped him, that he'd have never married me if he'd known. I cried. And when I screamed,